Welcome to this episode of the Super Yacht Laundry podcast. I am joined today with, we were just saying actually, I've known you for a while, but then I don't know whether I know you. So that doesn't make sense. We've seen each other at loads of events, but I'm joined with the lovely Lydia Moss. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, it's I feel like I've got my rhythm back now after Christmas. It's like the weirdest time of year after the series of boat shows and everything the end of last year, and then you kind of get January to actually sit still and
you had quite a big year last year anyway. You know, it's all come down from there. I think you had a few things going on.
Yeah, it all positive, but it was just one thing after another last year. So yeah. I was really excited actually after having a proper break over Christmas. I was really excited for this year. I feel like there's a few teething issues and a few kind of big jobs we had to get done at the back end of last year. So it's like, okay, we've started fresh. We've got a clear plan.
That's good.
So yeah, I say that now and then we'll be traveling again in next week and then it'll all just fly by. It'll be summer again.
You know, you're probably lured into a false sense of security. You know, this is the quiet period. The bonkersness literally starts March, because even Dubai's in March now, isn't it, the Dubai show?
Yeah, and for us now is the best time really for us to go and spend time with clients directly, and obviously if we've got audits going on and they line up, it's a good time for us. It doesn't really clash too much for us to go out and get on board and spend some time with the captains and crew that we look after. So we end up
don't divulge too much of what you're being up to, because we have to start the story at the very beginning.
Okay.
So as we were just mentioning, because with this whole craze of putting up what you were doing in 2016, I was just saying that I'm 10 years out of the industry. But you said you were 10 years in. So what was Lydia doing before she got dragged into this wild world of yachting?
So it'll be my 10 years this year. I started working in the yachting industry in 2016. And before that, because I kind of left school and I knew that I wanted to do something that involved travel and something a bit adventurous. I think everyone kind of looks for that when they're finished with school. And I wasn't quite sure what direction I wanted to go in, and ended up working in several sales and marketing roles, still kind of joint roles. I enjoyed both. I liked sales and building relationships.
From the sea? You live by the sea or not near the sea?
I grew up in Devon. So we weren't far, but we were quite in the countryside. So no, not really. Normally when you meet yachties that are from Devon, they grew up in Salcombe or somewhere much nicer. So yeah, it was kind of there, but not a huge maritime industry near us. The nearest would probably be Plymouth. I kind of really what started or what introduced me to the yachting industry was my sister. So she joined the Navy when I was 11. She was 16, about to turn 17.
Wow.
And she was really young. Like as soon as she dropped out of A-levels, was like, no, I'm going to go and join the Navy. And I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. I thought it was really brave. I think I was obviously really young and saw her as the older sister, but I just thought it was really cool that she just went for it and chucked everything at it. So she went off and joined the Navy. And that was kind of my first eye-opening experience to people just setting off and joining us in the world of seafarers. So
did you go and see her when she was like joining vessels and stuff?
They're
big boats, you know.
Yeah she was on HMS Ocean and HMS Campbelltown, so we got to go and do some family days and I got to see her mess and like all the camaraderie that comes with being in the Navy. I thought it was so cool, like all of her friends would come visit when she was on leave, and just like the it just broadened her horizons massively. So I think that to me was always in the back of my mind. I nearly followed in her footsteps.
Did you?
Yeah, I was really keen. I thought it was just like the idea of joining the Navy and just picking a skill set that you wanted to focus on, whether it was engineering or you could be a weapons expert, or it's just like this endless list of roles that you could join and do. I thought that was the way I was going to go. I kind of took my time to think about it. I still wasn't quite sure. I knew I wanted to see the world and get out there, but I just ended up working in Exeter in a sales role. And then it was when she met her now husband. So they were on, when my sister met her husband, they were on the same ship together. And he was from a yachty family. So his mum was a stewardess in the 80s, and his dad lived in Monaco, worked at the Fairmont, and like they were kind of, he knew about that world, even though he didn't grow up in that world, he knew about it. And I remember him telling me about it, and there was a company in Exeter, Global Services, that supplied super yachts.
Mm-hmm.
So he had done a bit of engineering work for them when he left the Navy. And that was where the introduction came in. So that was in 2016. So he said, you know, you should give it a go. I think you'd enjoy it. It's full of ex-crew. It's a really nice working environment. Everyone's super interesting. A lot of them had been in the Royal Navy as well. A lot of them were ex-engineers.
It's a bit glossier than the Navy. What did you say?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah. It's fancy.
And that was the thing. I moved out quite quickly. And I was living with friends when I was 17, so I just didn't know which way to go, but I knew that I wanted my independence, and I'd never fancied uni, never appealed to me whatsoever, but I ended up getting introduced to the guys at Global, and I just loved that vibe in the office and the stories, you know, like sitting next to ex-Royal Navy engineers or guys that had worked on yachts, and you just being around those guys was interesting enough for me at that time, and it was great. I joined as like a sale in a sales admin role, so I was kind of supporting the yacht account managers there, and I don't know if you know, if you ever worked with Global when you're on board, but they're a procurement company, so they supplied everything from mostly engineering spares, but deck supplies, interior goods, everything. And they did a lot with new builds as well. So I kind of got stuck in with the new build side of the business quite quickly. And I thought it was great. It's so interesting. Obviously, you're speaking with these crew that are based out in Holland or Germany for an extended period of time, but you're speaking to them every single day, day in, day out for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, depending on how quickly they join the project. But you just build these relationships really steadily over time.
Yeah.
So I was there for kind of 2 years doing that role. And that was obviously office based in Exeter. And I ended up showing a bit more interest in kind of getting out and traveling a bit more to go and visit some of the boats that were based over in the Med, as well as the new build side. So that was kind of my introduction to the wider industry. Obviously, I was in this tiny little bubble that just ordered spares and shipped them out to some unknown address, but yeah, luckily I kind of got had a really good mentor in the office who was our business development manager. So he was flying out to the south of France once a month, and visiting all the boats basically between Monaco and La Ciotat.
Yeah,
so that was his role. And then thankfully he asked me to come with him on one of the trips, and then that was kind of the beginning of it. So
that was like, ooh, I might have to do my SCCW for this.
Yeah, that was the eye-opening moment, I think. I was just like, this is so, especially because I'd got to know quite a few crew over those 2 years. And then when you go and meet them in person, and then, you know, you get their backstories, and a lot of them are obviously British as well, and you kind of build those relationships. They might even be from the South Coast somewhere. So getting to go out and visit them in the south of France or Parma, wherever they were, just made it feel really like achievable to go out and do what they were doing.
It's hella achievable, but it is that the south of France, the light's different. It's nice. It looks really cool. You see all the boats lined up. It is
it's pretty special the first time you go out and see it with your own eyes. I think I was always really, as soon as we had an email in from a boat with an inquiry, I was like digging around trying to How big was it? Where was it built? When was it launched? Like all the, I wanted to know everything about why that boat existed, which I think came to actually help me later in my career now, because weirdly, I just retain a lot of that information. But
Well,
yeah.
global, obviously it's more technical straight out the gate. So although, you're in a sales role, you've still got to have an understanding of what these bits and pieces are, how it all works and stuff like that. Did you like that? Did you like the kind of engineering-y type stuff?
Yeah, I did. I think procurement's procurement, isn't it? But we had this service that was like an extra layer to that. So because we had a lot of ex-Royal Navy engineers, we would send them out to the boat when the first kind of major engineering equipment's been installed, and they would go around and take photos of all the serial numbers, and then they'd come back to the office with all these files of photos, and then we would go and contact the manufacturers and ask for the recommended list of spares. And then there's a whole, we were offering them a service where we could actually help them prepare for the boat to be operational. So we were quite involved with some builds. And obviously you kind of learn the importance of everything that has to go right in the build stage, obviously with the construction, but everything you need on board for the boat to be operational and ready to go when it has to be. So it was, yeah, I think I learned a lot, and obviously I had some great mentors in the office explaining the importance of everything. And you just get to know what technology is on board. And the cost, I think that was quite interesting. Like the amount of money that boats have to spend on spares right from the get-go was quite eye-opening. So yeah, it was just a good introduction, I think. It was kind of a soft introduction to the industry. And then yeah, as soon as I started getting out on the road and visiting boats and getting to know captains and chief engineers, and you got to sit on board in the crew mess and get a bit of a vibe for it, I think that was when I was like, this is just the place to be, and
I can do
everyone's
it.
so
I can do
friendly
it.
and
I can pack
welcoming.
my bag at the door.
It kind of, I tried to do that. It didn't really work. So that was, yeah, when I started traveling more, I then was like, I just have to go and do this. It's calling me. So I handed him a notice at Global, went and did my SCCW, sorry, did my powerboat course in Southampton, then booked my SCCW and Biot. So I had my flight booked to fly out to Nice. Went out, did that. Thankfully, my sister was already living in Antibes then. Her and her husband had got a place there, so I had somewhere to stay whilst I looked for work. So went out, did that, got my CV ready. Luckily, we had a friend at Wilson Halligan at the time, so they kind of gave me a bit of friendly advice and helped me with my CV, because it is obviously so different from what I'd prepared for land-based roles before. And then was on the job hunt, had a bit of day work here and there. Luckily, I was living like just around the corner from the from Port of Avon, so had a few opportunities come out of that. But Global eventually called up and just said, hey, we actually would really like to set up an office in France. So you're kind of out there. How would you feel about just staying with us? And I think at this point, I was starting to have doubt, mainly because of the feedback I'd had about my tattoos and because I wanted to work on
Oh,
deck.
no, not the
And
deadly
yeah, and they're
tattoos.
not subtle either. Anyone that I've met in person knows they're quite obvious that I have
What did they have?
tattoos. Like half a sleeve on my forearm, so you couldn't hide it. But I didn't want to, like, obviously, yeah, perhaps if I'd thought about yachting when I was 18, I wouldn't have gone and got loads of tattoos, but I did what I wanted to
Hindsight
do.
is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
How you're supposed to plan for it, I don't know.
So that did feel like a bit of a setback, and obviously you kick yourself for a bit, but at the same time it opened a new door, which was kind of getting what I wanted anyway. I wanted to live in France. I really liked my team at Global. I was doing well there. I was, progressing and had a couple of promotions by that point when I left anyway. So I kind of just felt like I was picking up where I left off, but I could just be in France and see, meet more crew and do a better job because I was there. So yeah, it kind of all worked out in my favor in the end. And obviously my sister was out there, so I kind of had a family unit, and it just, that was it then for the next 5 years. So I just drove around the south of France in my in my global van.
And awful, you know, just living in the south of France, all that nice bread.
Yeah, it was great. I just think Antibes got such a cool community. Obviously so many crew set up there. Local businesses that are ex-yacht crew that have, you know, planted themselves there as well. It's kind of, I know it's changed a lot over the last few years, but it still to me is like the center of yachting.
It's still the center. It just looks loads better, you know. Obviously, you know, going back, so when I went back, obviously I was back there during the Monaco show because we stayed in there. They've glammed it up, like it looks lovely, but that's not, when I started, that's not what it looked like, you know. It was lovely, especially in the summer, but you know, in the winter time when it's raining and it's wet and it's a bit dark in places, you know, but it's,
yeah, so, it can be a bit bleak, especially when you're there for COVID on your own. It was, yeah,
so you were there for COVID.
Yeah, there were some low moments then because obviously it was just so unknown, and my job was literally driving up and down the coast, and I would go to Italy every other week, so I'd drive as far down as Livorno and see any boats that we were working with there in the shipyards. And then obviously that all got cut off when Italy started having issues. So I was kind of just sat in my apartment, like, I just don't know what I'm supposed to do about this. Like, should I look at going back to the UK? But I didn't have a place there anymore, so I guess I'll just stay put. And then obviously a week turned into 2 weeks, and then it was 4 months later. But I mean, I had a great summer because all my friends that worked on board didn't really have any charters booked, so they got loads of time off in summer. So we actually had like the best July that I can ever remember because all of my friends were still around. It was a weird time.
It was such a weird, like, when you, it's one of those things, isn't it? When we're old and grey and we're going to explain to our kids that what happened, and it was a very, very weird.
I don't know what I did with my time. I really don't know. I was furloughed as well. So I don't know what I was doing. Running. I'd go for a run every morning, and then the usual FaceTime rounds where you'd call mum and sister and try and catch up with everyone, but you can only do that so many times a week. I don't know what I was doing the rest of my time, but anyway,
drinking wine, eating nice cheese, I don't know.
Yeah, there was a bit of that.
Going to a nice beach for a bit because it's outside.
Yeah, exactly. All those weird challenges that were happening on, like, push-up challenges and whatever else. I don't know. It was a weird fever dream, but yeah. So I stayed after that and did another year, and then Brexit kind of ruined my setup, so I had to come back to the UK after that. But I mean, it worked out okay. I came back, I still had a job to go to, managed to set myself up with somewhere new to live for a while, and then I met my partner, now wife. So anyway, it worked out the way it was supposed to.
All meant to be. Exactly. I mean, that must be quite crazy, you know. Obviously, you know, people talk about Brexit and everything else, you know, lots of businesses had to completely change the way, you know, we've got a huge maritime arm that stretches into all sorts of things in Europe. It must have been a bit of a, you know, especially if you're having a nice time out there.
Yeah, we were growing a lot at the time as well, so as everyone experienced, it just slowed everything down when we were really on a good trajectory. So it was quite, not the sail out of my winds a bit, because we were just about to open a new office and I was potentially gonna do exactly what I'd done in the south of France but in Palma, so there was a possibility I was going to move there as well, which I was excited for, and we were going to grow the team and the med and all these things that actually we had to completely put everything on hold and focus on setting up a hub in Europe, which ended up being in Holland. So I was helping with that and trying to build a team over there instead. But it just, the plans changed and it took a while to recover, as everyone did. It just brought everything to a bit of a grinding halt. But I think, yeah, they're on the up now.
It's not the south of France, though, is it?
No, exactly.
It's colder than here.
I didn't look forward to those trips quite as much, but yeah, it was still a good experience. I think setting up a company, a Dutch company, is a real, it's good experience to know how to do it. I think for any company, setting up a different entity is in Europe is potentially useful if you work in the yachting industry. It just wasn't the way it used to be. Obviously, when you could ship everything out of the UK and it would be there the next day, that was so straightforward. But anyway, so yeah, I moved back to the UK, and then I'm trying to remember what year I ended up leaving Global. I think it was 2021, 2022. And then, yeah, just decided that I'd done enough there, had a good 7 years, really enjoyed it, learnt loads, met loads of people, left it in a good place, but I was just kind of ready for a new challenge. I think it was Brexit, really, that was just becoming too much of an issue at the time. I just wanted to try something different. So that's when I moved to another company. It was called JMO. So that was run by an ex-owner's rep. So he started three companies, which he needed help with growing those. So I ended up working for him and kind of shadowing him as well, because he had a family office advisory company.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting. I think I'd not had much experience on that side of things. Obviously, you deal with owner's reps and occasionally family offices when it comes to procurement, but mostly management companies and crew. Yeah. So that was kind of a different direction, but I found that really interesting. And
your business development, though, is it? You kind of end up falling into the, you know, like, let's start. But then saying that, building, you know, starting, it takes a lot of energy. You've got to be in the right headspace to go, right, let's build something, you know. It's a lot yeah, to take on.
Yeah, it is, especially in an industry that's becoming quite saturated, I'd say. Like, there's a lot more choice than there used to be. Even 10 years ago, I don't think there was as much choice. When you look at procurement, that's obviously exploded. Recruitment as well is insane. There's new recruitment agents popping up every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks, you know.
And
I do wonder how they make money to live.
I know, but yeah, they just have, you know, a couple of good clients and a small team, and that seems to work for them. So I do get the appeal of setting up your own company, but we had this conversation the other day at an event. I think a lot of these companies that keep popping up, if they worked together and collaborated, then everyone would have a way better experience. You'd have way less stressed business owners worrying about how many clients they've got, and you can work together and actually provide a better service for a lot of these things. But
I think with COVID, you know, a lot of people, you know, it did provide a stopping point where loads are like, oh, I would really like to do this on my own. And also the way, you know, before, if you were starting a business, you know, you have to have fully functioning HR and where, you know, marketing, like, you can start a business just with yourself. Technology is so rapid. It can connect you with, you know, clients really easily, whereas back in the day it was a bit more hard graft in a way, because it was a physical thing to get yourself out there. It wasn't just a promotion thing online, yeah, if you know what I mean. It wasn't easy for you to connect with individuals in Italy. Do you know what I mean? You had to physically, yeah, go there to connect.
Yeah.
Whereas now, and obviously COVID obviously supercharged that, people got more comfortable with just connecting online. You know,
and yeah, which is definitely a positive. I think it's a really good idea in some cases. I do think with the way the industry is going, potentially there's a lot more room for collaboration. It's just all these subcategories of, like, even procurement as an example. There's an ex chief officer who's now set up their own procurement company, but it just specializes in tenders or toys. And it's like, okay, that's great, but your buying power is never going to be as good as if you, yeah, work with other people that are also buying lots of kit. So it's just, there comes a point, I don't think it's necessarily always the right way to go, but I mean, hats off to anyone that does it. I know it's a huge decision to make, But yeah, it does feel like on LinkedIn every week there's a new company, especially software, obviously, which is great. But a lot of them are doing similar things.
Literally, everybody is, you know, setting up and stuff like that, which I get. But I just don't know. Like, I would never go. I worked in recruitment. There's just no way. Maybe it's just because I've worked in it. I'm just like, you're crazy to do it. You know, because everybody assumes it's quite easy. But like you said, there's so many now. I mean, look at, you know, I started this podcast a while ago now, and there wasn't that many of them. Now you can have a podcast whatever you like, you know. Yeah. You want a procurement podcast? I don't know how exciting that would be, but I'm sure there's one out.
Not very. Yeah. No, recruitment's like difficult, isn't it? Because there's so many online recruiters now that don't necessarily offer a service, but they'll just fire out 10 candidates. Okay, you need a spa shoe. Here's 10 CVs. It's like, you could just go on YachtSpot and do that, because they've definitely not called up and given that candidate a brief. And
no.
There's lots of...
I think it's flipping back a little like bit. I think, you know, like you said, there has been a bit of a saturation point. I do think it's kind of flipping back, you know, that companies want, you know, they don't mind connecting online, but they do now want to connect in person, because we are now understanding the limitations of running a business online. You know, my husband has people that work remotely. Your managerial style with working remotely with people to them working in an office with people, it's completely different. You know what I mean? Certain things become really big issues just because you're not sitting across each other to just get it done, get it resolved, move on. It's like through messages, and then you've got to schedule in a Zoom, and it's a completely different experience.
Yeah, fully remote. It must be difficult from a leadership perspective. I'm quite fortunate that we have an office in Southampton, so we do 3 days a week in there and then 2 days out and about, which is great, because coming on a Monday and just get, you know, you're ahead on the week already because everyone's there and you can just say what you need to say.
Yeah.
Tell everyone where you're going to be, what your plan is, and everyone knows. Whereas, yeah, if you're kind of communicating through a screen all the time, it's really difficult to know. And like what, you know, what issues might have popped up over the weekend and things that need to be dealt with on a Monday morning. It's just so much easier to have that. So I am very fortunate. I think I'd probably be one of the people that struggles with 100% remote role. Even though I did it in France, it was fine because I was out speaking to people all day. But yeah, if I was just on the laptop all day, I barely was in my apartment on my laptop. I was always on the road, spending time with clients. So that was great. But yeah, I can imagine it's hard work. But then saying that, I was in Bournemouth the other day at one of the co-working spaces just to try it out. There's a few yachty friends that have, that's where they're set up. And that was great. And I really enjoyed that environment. So there are places now that you can obviously go and have a bit of a productive environment, which before you just wouldn't. But yeah, it's just all changed, hasn't it? 100%, even in the last few years.
It's rapid, but you seem to be keeping up with, you know, the moment kind of thing. You know, obviously with the, you know, with global expanding into, you know, you've literally been on the crest of kind of all the change, Brexit, and then, you know, moving into a family office. Did you what were your first impressions with it? You know, dealing with the other end of, because you've literally been dealing, you know, engineers to, you know, owners. It's a big contrast.
Yeah, I think it was interesting how much support you need to give, and the variations of family offices and how potentially you've got, you know, they could be the owner's PA that's ended up overseeing the finances for the vessel, or is reporting into the owner, and just like the support and the information that we would need to give in order to make sure that everyone had a clear picture all the time. So it definitely helped with my communication skills, I'd say. And you do feel under pressure quite a lot, but it was valuable, and it definitely kind of geared me up for, because I was there for a year, 18 months, and then that was when I was kind of introduced to the role at Divergent Yachting. And that I felt really prepared to go into that. I think I'd had a really good kind of warm-up role to then move into the yacht management side. So I was really grateful for that. I think it really helped my wider understanding. You get so sucked into whatever sector you're in. Mm. And it definitely kind of opened my eyes to everything else that goes into it.
Well, they all interact with each other, but very rarely do people flip from one to the other, if you know what I mean. You kind of stick to your lane most of the time. But to have the exposure of both ends of the picture kind of thing,
it helps.
It's quite like meant to be then, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was. It's definitely broadened my knowledge across the industry as a whole, and I still really love that I had, that longevity at Global, because they had a huge network. All the suppliers we worked with, all of the crew, they had 300 boats that they worked with. Like, it was just for the networking side, it was amazing. And I didn't even realize it was networking at the time. You just spoke to all these people on a weekly basis. But it really helped for what was next. And then obviously moving into the Divergent office, I think it's good to understand each end of it, but still have the crew as like the central focus. That was where I spent most of my time, was spending time with crew on board. So yeah, to move into the yacht management world, where I think there's obviously mixed perceptions of what a yacht management company
there is, very mixed perception. So how did Derek romance you, or did you approach him? Did he was like, oh, hi.
Yeah, I was really lucky, actually, that I'd kind of known him on and off over the years anyway. And obviously during the build of Black Pearl, when he was very much on the scene at Ocean Co, we kind of crossed paths then. And then I'd met him quite a few times at various events, and just always had a really nice relationship. And he was always really... He's obviously very funny. He's very open about what he's doing. He's very forward thinking. It just felt like the right fit at the time. And it's no secret that Divergent was involved with the build of Black Pearl. And that was kind of the start of Divergent Yachting, was to run the boat operationally. So that story alone was quite intriguing. And then getting to know how the company's developed over the years since then, because that was 2018 that the company was started.
Phil, obviously, for anybody who doesn't know of Divergent Yachting, do you give them... who's Derek?
So Derek Munro was the owner's rep for Black Pearl. So he worked with the owner from the very beginning, pretty much from the design stage of the build, all the way through to delivery. And during kind of the last 2 years, I suppose, of the build, the owner wanted Derek to set up and start a yacht management company to support the boat. So that was kind of where it all started. Derek pulled in a team. They were all really involved with getting the boat set up.
The DPA was unique, isn't it?
Very, yeah. Yeah, she's amazing. It was pretty cool to, because I obviously knew about the boat, everyone did, but I'd never seen the boat in person. And my first week at Divergent Yachting, we were on board for a visit, and that was just a really special moment to get on. And I knew a lot of the crew just from events and over email and things, so it was really nice to get on board. And actually, it is breathtaking. It's such a unique experience. And we got to go sailing, and yeah, it was.
If you can, just for anybody who doesn't know, like, what can you describe Black Pearl? Because she's, how would you describe what that boat is and what it does?
So she's 105 meter Ocean Co with a pretty famous Dyna Rig system on board. So that was quite well. She's the first of her kind out of Ocean Co. There's a few Dyna Rigs that are around. Hopefully there's going to be a lot more. I know there's a few that are being built around the world at the moment, which is really exciting. But yeah, she was the first of her kind and was kind of tagged as the most sustainable super yacht in the industry at that time. And the captains are great. One of the captains has been there since the build. His rotational partner has been there since just after the build. So they've done a lot of miles on Black Pearl, and they every time they do an Atlantic crossing, they try and sail as much as they can. So I think last time they managed to sail 80% without burning any fossil fuels.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been a really exciting year, the last year. So the boat joined the charter market around the time that I joined Divergent, so 18 months ago, just under. And that was the first time that the boat had ever actually been seen, like the interior had ever been seen publicly. So it was pretty intense. It kind of got approval for the boat to charter right at the end of, October. And the boat was already at the shipyard, kind of preparing for the yard period, taking stuff apart and covering things up. Got the go ahead. So Derek had to let the crew know and speak to the captain, and it was like, right, we're crossing the Atlantic. Let's do this and make it across in time for the Antigua Boat Show. So that was going to be the first time that anyone saw her available and ready for chartering. So they got across. I think they arrived 2 days before the show. Luckily, yeah, they had quite good weather, so they could get the boat mostly prepped on the way over, and then straight into the show. And then they had about 150 brokers on board looking at the boat, and just obviously she's so famous, but nobody had seen the interior. And the when you're on board, I mean, it's obviously sailing yachts can feel quite small sometimes when you're on board. There's a lot of space taken up by the rigging and everything, but she's got the volume of like an 80 meter motor yacht. So
it's a super, you know, you described you know, Derek is forward thinking. I would probably argue futuristic thinking. You know, Black Pearl was, yeah, you know, the first of her kind. You know, sustainability is important. And at the same time, in our industry, a bit of an, it's not just a novelty, it's like a unicorn. You know, the industry itself is not sustainable, you know, as much as they try to lay off their carbon footprint and all of that jazz. It's not, yeah, really.
Obviously it's the technology makes her a sustainable, well, as sustainable as a super yacht can really be, but it's also, it was the crew on board during the build. They had a really core group of people that really cared. And it was around the time, I don't know if you followed the original Black Pearl account, but they used to document everything, and it would be you know, setting up the crew mess and the sustainable products that they'd chosen to have on board and that the owner was encouraging, and like all these things that everyone felt really involved in what they were doing and felt quite passionate about it. So I think that carried a long way. And we recently kind of restarted the Black Pearl Instagram just because of the charter side, which the crew are running on board. But there hasn't really been anything like that in a while that was so crew focused. We're trying to get the new account to be more like that, but it was just so raw and, yeah, unedited of what they were doing. And I think everyone felt like they knew that kind of crew environment on board and the people that were there from the beginning. So yeah, it's a really special boat. And I think it's, Derek was obviously there from the very beginning. So it's great for him to have that stamp, but I mean, it's not, he's not stopping there. It's going to continue.
Well, no, I, you know, I've heard a few bits and pieces. So obviously you're kind of working with Divergent in a development, business development role, like obviously all of your other experience, but you can't develop and manage boats like that without getting involved in how it all works. You know, with unique vessels come unique managerial issues. You know, it can be a bit more tricky. So and that's not even going into the new stuff. But obviously, once you started working for Divergent, you know, did it feel like a culmination of everything, you know, that you've been through to date?
No, it kind of did. It did, yeah, but I did feel like I was not starting from the beginning, that's wrong, but I felt really excited because I was about to learn something new, you know, and it felt like I hadn't done that in a while because I'd just kind of been using the knowledge that I'd built up over the years. But yeah, I started, obviously I joined as a business development manager because that's my background. But part of the deal was that I would also join as a junior yacht manager, not because I want to go down necessarily the yacht management path, but just to expand my knowledge. And obviously I think it's really important, especially with small businesses, to have somebody that can easily jump between the management team and the client, the captains, heads of department that are actually using our software and our systems on board every day, and be that communication between if there's, you know, things that we could do slightly differently, or if there's improvement. When it comes down to software, there's always improvements that can be made. So that was really good to kind of get in and understand where we stood with all of that. So yeah, I've been learning a lot. I have my training every week, kind of. I know we travel a lot and we're not in the office much, but it's really useful to me that I'm always kind of learning and moving forward. And I think our yacht management team will continue to grow. We're on a really good growth path at the moment, which is really exciting. So although I won't be, you know, part of that yacht management team, I'll be somewhere in between helping the business kind of develop and grow as it should. So, which takes time.
Well, and also
I'm impatient, but it's, yeah,
just to add a bit more complication to it, the area that Derek's, you know, emerging into, do you want to give us a bit more, give the listeners a bit of a synopsis of where Divergent Yachting is heading towards?
Yeah, so it's really exciting. So Derek, I kind of knew something was going on when I started at Divergent. You kind of just, there was a few subtle hints. Yeah, I wasn't too sure. He was being quite vague, but I knew something was going on in the background. I knew that there was a project that he was involved with, and I knew that it was going to be something very much of the future that was going to be a complete game changer, basically. So that project kind of came to a pause, and Derek then launched his new company, which is Nox Free. Which is ultimately nuclear technology. So this is something he's been working on the last 4 years, since 2021. So he was approached by a client to build the first nuclear yacht. They went through the process of designing this huge 140-meter boat that needed this huge nuclear unit on there. And it just wasn't quite what the client wanted, but that was the only technology that was kind of out there at the time. And it kind of led, so Derek pulled together a team of naval architects and technical consultants, and they've been operating under Nox Free, and that kind of led them to go out on these research trips, so spending time over in the States, and it's led them to a nuclear unity module. So it's a very compact unit that can be put on 45 meter boats and above. So that was it, really. So although that project's kind of on the back burner for the moment, this is still continuing. So this is something that shipyards are really interested in. Obviously everyone's talking about it. No one really knew where to start. Mm-hmm. And no one really knew that Derek's team had been working on it for the last 4 years.
No, it's super secret. Like
super secret.
It's like after a few drinks, yeah, I've been working on something, but he won't tell you what it is. I've never drink.
No, fortunately, I'm allowed to talk about it. I only was, obviously, once that project ended and they decided they were going to commit and go ahead to introduce this technology into the industry, it's okay to talk about. It's their product. They've got, you know, all those agreements with the manufacturers who are making these units. So, yeah, it's really exciting. All of the regulatory bodies are loving it. They're all pushing ahead to get it all sorted by 2027. So the plan is that there'll be a nuclear vessel by 2030, or it'll be installed on a boat by 2030.
Wow, that's quite amazing.
So there's a very clear roadmap between now and then.
How is your nuclear fusion knowledge?
Come along.
I want to do business development. All right, you're going to learn about nutrition.
No, it was, yeah, I didn't really think I knew what I was letting myself in for really when I started, but no, I'm it's very, very exciting. And I think to see,
oh, interesting.
It's really interesting. But it's also just like the challenge that comes with it is so intriguing, because obviously everyone has a bit of a negative connotation with nuclear. And it's trying to kind of educate and shift the public perception, because these units are incredibly safe. That's why the regulators, they want to see it, because it's technically, it could be considered safer than a typical diesel engine. So it's
a game changer.
Yeah, it is. And obviously it'll be a completely different way of operating for any vessel that does have the unit on board. But the engineers don't need to do any maintenance. They don't touch it. They just look at the control panel and power it up and power it down. But it's it's kind of a standalone unit that you don't really need any, well, we don't think yet that they'll need any special training for that. So that's something obviously that will come clear in the next couple of years. But
well, it's, we would hope we might get a little bit of training, you know.
They'll obviously have training.
I do love an engineer, but let's give them, you know, there was some very confident.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll have training on board, but I just mean they won't have to be, you know, ex-nuclear submariners.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the things. It's like, where are we going to find all these
nuclear submariners? Well, they're all powering submarines in the Navy. The Navy's going to get really annoyed. You're like romancing all of these.
Bring them over to the yachting industry.
Guys, come out of the dark. Why don't you come and work on this gorgeous yacht? Imagine they'll be chomping at the bit. So yeah, the Navy would probably, you wouldn't be very popular with
them. Well, one of the guys on Derek's team was in the Royal Navy on a nuclear sub for over a decade, so that's where his kind of expertise has come in as well. So he's got a really good team that's kind of driving it forward, and I think the yards are really excited about it. Obviously it's now a case of who's going to be the first. So yeah, there's a lot that's going to happen in the next few years with that, and we're getting on the road in February to go and present to lots of yards that have shown interest after Met. So it's going to be exciting. But yeah, it's just the whole package, really. The public perception thing is obviously going to be the biggest challenge. Then it's adoption from marinas and shipyards. But I think that shipyards are quite keen, because they could have one of those units on land powering the whole shipyard, and they won't have to be sucking power off the grid. So for them, economically, it makes sense, and a lot of them want to see it happen. So, yeah.
Well, that goes into a massive political debate about where you get your energy from. But it's so exciting, and it's one of those things that you know is just going to change the face of everything. You know.
Yeah, I think it really is. You know, the first issue that they thought they were going to have was the regulatory side, and then. But all the key regulators in the yachting industry, they're so behind it. It's like, okay, well, we've got a clear timeline for that. What's next? And it is public perception and getting out there and talking about it, which I think there's been a couple of talks the last kind of show season about it, but they're still talking about big units, whereas this one's a lot smaller and a lot safer. So hopefully that will be the key to people actually switching to nuclear. We'll see.
And you'll be there, first and foremost, the front. It's a bit daunting. Yeah.
No, it's good. I'm learning a lot at the moment. Putting these presentations together is helping with my, it's like revision.
You know, we'll do another episode and catch you up. You'll be like a dab hand. We'll be able to do a whole episode with a full presentation. But it's quite, you know, going back to what we said, you know, I'm 10 years out and you're 10 years in. What a roller coaster that 10 years has been. And your roller coaster is still going. You know,
just started, really. But it is. I think I could never have imagined kind of what path I would take. And, you know, that one decision to work for a procurement company in Exeter. Kind of changed everything. And obviously I am lucky that I've had some really good mentors, either in my family or, you know, working at Global. There were some great guys there that kind of took me under their wing and I think they could see that I was genuinely interested in the industry as a whole, and it wasn't just like a 9-to-5er. So that people that care about the industry like seeing that in other people, and they want that kind of interest.
And now you've got Derek Monroe.
Now it's Derek. So yeah, it was meant to be, obviously. I think it's been a really fun few years. I think that's like I was lucky. But also, I think I've just had so much fun along the way that, yeah, hopefully many more years to come in the yachting industry. I think it's changed so much, though, like even in those 10 years. Even talk about tattoos, you know, like the crew's changed. Like, obviously, you mentioned well-being quite a few times in other pods and things, but like that has shifted so much, which I'm...
It's still there, you know. Obviously, having a daughter myself, I would probably tell her to avoid it if you can, because it's just not like it's one of those things. You know, I never wanted to get rid of mine because I got them at really poignant moments. I wasn't one that just got one because I was drunk. You know what I mean? They were just moments to remember. So I didn't really want. That's why I fought a bit like yourself, like just you know to try and get in there on merit. It has changed and it has relaxed, but my advice to anyone young is just don't get it so it's visible without skirts and a t-shirt. It's just not worth the hassle, to be honest. It's not worth the hassle. Don't be as stubborn as me or Lydia. Yeah. If you were to give advice to you know a lady that's working within the industry, sure might be listening to this podcast, what would your advice be?
I think just ask as many questions as possible. I think that's one thing that I've never stopped doing, even if in the role that I'm doing, I feel like I'm doing a good job and I know what I'm doing. Never stop asking the people around you what they do. And I think understanding the industry as a whole is only ever going to help you and your experience. And yeah, that's something that I would always recommend, even if you feel like it's, you know, you might, like you said earlier, staying in your lane. I don't think there's ever any harm in understanding each corner of the industry because they all work together and it is still very, very small.
Yeah.
And just do it. Whatever opportunity comes up, if you think you could do it, then go for it. I don't think I ever questioned. Obviously, I was 20 when I started in the yachting industry, but I don't think I ever thought I couldn't move to France and buy a van and do whatever came up. I know that sounds quite straightforward, but for me, you know, I wouldn't have thought that I couldn't do anything.
Well,
in 10 years in, I'm like getting a little bit more aware of things I can't do, but...
Well, you know, you're probably rooted back to seeing your sister at 16. You go, right, I'm going to go off and
do exactly.
Like, you know, if she can do that, I can go drive a van in the south of France. She's going off onto an aircraft carrier or, you know, a battleship or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe it's something in your family.
Yeah, no, I'll always be very grateful. I had her kind of, she just didn't even think about it, didn't think twice, just did it, and it worked out, paid off.
Well, it's been really interesting hearing your story. You know, I am a collector of stories, and your route into what you're doing, you know, you couldn't map that out, you know, and it wouldn't even, you know, if somebody was trying to set you out a career path, it wouldn't work out, they wouldn't advise that way either. But you know, having quiet confidence and capability, like you said, always asking questions, giving it a go. It's amazing where you can end up. Yeah, with Derek Monroe, you can end up with...
Yeah, exactly.
Working with nuclear with Derek Monroe. Who would have
thought? You'll see me at the launch of the first nuclear vote. It took 15 years, but got it.
I don't think, considering how fast everything's going at the moment, I don't think it would be that fast. What I would like to see is obviously boats are doing it because, you know, trying to be seen more as a sustainable industry, but moving stuff ashore massively. So like if you're a yard and you're like, worry, well, we've got them on the boats, but can we have one in the yard? I get that. But then that gets into disrupting how everything works within a government. And do you know what I mean? Like if companies are now opting to try and get nuclear, even though, because you think about how it works on land, they build massive nuclear power plants.
Well,
You're,
that's changing as
they
well.
don't have to do that. A business could maybe opt into doing it and taking themselves out of the grid system. That is probably going to be more interesting. They'll let you, they'll take it on board on boats, and that's like one thing. But if a yard wants to cut themselves off from the grid,
Well,
too.
obviously, nuclear is already, successful in the States, and there's these huge data centers that are buying these small nuclear units to power those, which is a good shift. But it's happening in Europe as well, and Holland is actually relatively far ahead. And they're building like a 20 megawatt unit in Rotterdam. So it's kind of the center of a lot of yacht building anyway. And I think now that these units are actually kind of becoming a reality, it won't be long. And
No, I
it's,
don't think
yeah, and these
it
are big units. Like the ones that are, Derek and his team are promoting to go on boats are 1 megawatt. So that big 20 megawatt one is huge. And then you won't even necessarily have to have a license to have one of these smaller ones. Because,
is. Surprising.
yeah, so it'll be really interesting to see what happens. But yeah, it's slightly political as well, see what happens in Europe over the next few years. And
Barely.
no, it's cool to be a fly on the wall and see what happens.
You're gonna be a fly on the wall. You're gonna get involved with it. Like I said, your roller coaster is literally just going tick, 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 tick to the top. At this
No,
moment,
it's
it's such an incredible project to be a part of and be around, and
yeah, it
what.
is. I'm really excited for Derek and his team because they're presenting at the Boat International Design Festival in a few weeks in Kitzbühel.
Ooh, exciting. That's a good ticket to have. Really
Yeah,
good ticket to
so that's kind of, he did a couple of presentations at the end of last year, but it was kind of a last minute decision to go public with all of it. And then there was such a huge interest straight away. It was like, okay, well, this year's going to be more of that then, and just getting out and promoting it. So yeah, we'll see what comes off the back. It'll be great to have all the designers, naval architects, and all the technical teams in one place.
like I said, I don't think it's going to take long.
No, we'll see.
It's going to be amazing, and maybe we'll get you back on to once your roller coaster's
Yeah,
gone.
I can tell you what I've learned.
Like, how are you doing, Lydia? Are you hanging in there?
In the meantime, hopefully there's some more Dyna rigs built and then we
Yeah,
can
to
talk
that
about
as well. You've got like two projects,
that.
just to keep you busy because you're not busy
Yeah,
enough.
exactly.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on, and please come back, because you are also at the forefront of these technologies. You are a woman,
Yes.
and we perhaps reflect on how easy it is to get your voice heard in such situations. I know obviously Derek's lovely and he'll hear your voice, but you know what I mean, when you're in these spaces, especially that kind of level, you're like, it's going to be a bit of a male dominated environment. So maybe we'll get you back on to talk about how you found it
Do a lot
all.
of listening, which is good, which I do. I mean, yeah, fortunately, when we do that road trip in a few weeks, the Knox-Free team are great, and they take the time to explain everything, which is, they don't have to. They could easily not do that, and I think it's they are great mentors, and they do take the time to educate, which I really appreciate. But yeah, it is, you're
I'm not
right.
being funny, Lydia. You're the business development person, so they need you to know your shit and be really good. Because
True.
it's all well around
I have a
doing your
choice.
bit,
I've got.
but you're the one that's going to go out there and push it. So I hope if you've got the time, you're going to be fabulous. You're going to
Thank
do
you. Thank you very
really
much
good.
for
I'm
inviting
excited
me on.
to hear I'm sure I'll be tracking you down in this obviously yachty season at some point or another to check in with you and see how it goes.
Yes.
But now, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We've really enjoyed listening to your story.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you've enjoyed that episode and you want to stalk Black Pearl or Lydia or Divergent Yachting, there'll be lots of articles, I imagine, posts, but we will provide links below for you to connect. If you like this episode, there are more available, but until the next time, take care, and I will see you again soon.